cope with stress. Yesterday we talked about the possibility of you could either reduce the amount, in order to help you cope with stress, you can either reduce the amount you have to do, you can not put it into such a tight time frame, or you can develop some coping skills for stress, and that's what we're going to be emphasizing this week, developing those coping skills. And that quote that we're going to emphasize today is, people are not disturbed by events by the view they take of them. So, a classic example could be, they came to the door as I got started and walked in and, you know, kind of fooled around. Now, there were several ways that I could have viewed that event. One way I could have viewed that event as being really not respecting what I was doing, you know, bothering me, coming in, you know, not making light of what was happening in this particular room as opposed to over there. I could have gotten very angry, I could have gotten stressed out about it. Or I could have looked at it as, oh, okay, sure, come on in, this is no problem, we've just begun, you know, we're not in the middle of anything, it's not problematic to come in here and to feel okay about it. So, people are not disturbed by events, but by the view they take of them. And that's what we're going to emphasize today. And the ABCs that I'm talking about were developed by a psychologist by the name of Albert Ellis. And he developed a psychological framework. You know, Freud has psychodynamic and Werner Erhard had Est, and let me think of a couple other names. Well, Albert Ellis developed the rational emotive form of therapy. And what that is, that what that said was, it emphasized looking at your emotions from a rational point of view. You know, what actually does this mean? How are my emotions based on how I view them? Okay. So yesterday, when we were talking about the physiology of the caveman, you know, and how that caveman went around the corner and saw the saber-toothed tiger, and his response was, ah, I either fight or I flee, and his stress went up and all of the adrenaline went coursing through his veins and all those other physiological things happened, and he either took off or he fought that saber-toothed tiger. Because his perception of that situation was what?
Danger.
This is a dangerous situation. Now, suppose that the caveman had never seen a saber-toothed tiger before, or his interactions with saber-toothed tigers before that time had been very pleasant. Perhaps he was like the wolf boy who had grown up with saber-toothed tigers, had enjoyed interacting with them. He comes around the corner, sees the saber-toothed tiger, and what? What would his reaction be? Would it be fight or flight? Would that stress rise?
Here, kitty, kitty.
Yeah, here, kitty, kitty. You know, come on over here. I'm used to you. And so the whole response would not even be triggered. And it's not necessarily because that is in a dangerous situation. I mean, he might not know that saber-toothed tiger, and that saber-toothed tiger might not be from the family that he was raised in. But because his view of it is different, his stress response is a different response. And so that's what Albert Ellis talks about. He talks about that that events, oftentimes people say, that made me angry. You know, if you're, if somebody, you're at the grocery store and somebody cuts in front of you in line to go into the seven to go into the seven-line thing, and they've got 12 items, you know. They push in front of you in line, and you said, that made me angry. Well, that is the event, okay? That is the A, the action, or the event. And the result of that, the C, the consequence of that, was your emotion. Okay, so the A is the event, or if we stick with A, we can put action. And if C would be the consequence. Okay, but someone pushing in front of you in line, is that there's a missing piece here. There's a B here. Because someone pushing you in front of you in line is not causing your emotion. What happens between the time that the person pushes in front of you in line and your response occurs, made probably an angry response? What's going on here? What are you thinking?
Well, if you're not in a hurry, you could say, well, that isn't so important. Let her go ahead.
Okay. All right. So if you're not in a hurry, your thoughts are, it's okay. You know, so your thoughts go in here, that's okay. So your response then would be, no problem, not anger. If you are in a hurry, what's your response?
Frustration,
anger. And what are you saying to yourself?
Well, darn it, I'm in a hurry.
That's right, I'm in a hurry. This is terrible. This is awful. She can't do that. This is, mm-hmm. Or he can't do that. This is awful. So, did the event cause that emotion? No, this middle part triggered whatever emotion. If you were in a hurry, if you saw the National Enquirer and were really reading a juicy article in that, you know, you may say, well, I could stand here all day, you know, this is a great thing. And you'd be fine. And then the emotion would be negative. It would be, you know, an all right emotion. So that's what Albert Ellis tried to help people understand, that it's not the event that's causing your emotions, it's this middle part. And you know what? You can change this middle part. You can determine how you're going to respond to a particular situation. And that's what Albert Ellis worked at trying to help his clients do, and how the rest of the people with rational emotive therapy, and often people who are working on stress management, attempt to help people to do, to change this middle part. Now, that's not so easy to do, because our example of the person pushing in front of you in front of the grocery line was kind of a, well, it could be a very typical response. Someone pushes you in front of you in line in the grocery line. You might not be particularly irritated because you're not in a hurry. But I know even if I'm not in a hurry, sometimes my thoughts lean toward, what do they think they're doing? You know, how come, you know, who do they think they are that they can push in front of me? You know, and then my thoughts continue to spiral like that. You know, they must not think very much of me to push in front of me. You know, and then maybe it goes another step more to, I must not be a particularly worthwhile person if this person can push in front of me. And then, yeah, isn't that always the way it is? Everybody does this to me. Everybody steps all over me, you know, because nobody thinks about me. Nobody cares about me. Pretty soon, you keep getting more and more, lower and lower. Finally, you're standing in the line. Feeling how? Feeling pretty miserable. You're also feeling your stomach starting to churn. your physiology, your maybe your breath's getting a little short, you're feeling tenseness in your muscles. I mean, what's occurring is you're starting to develop some stress concerning this because of the thoughts that go on surrounding that. And a lot of what's happening, have you heard of the term self-talk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell me what you understand by the meaning of self-talk.
Talking yourself out of your bad mood and into some good, finding reasons of why that happened and why you shouldn't feel that way.
That's farther down the line. Generally, self-talk is not something that's positive. What is self-talk?
It's messages you give yourself. Things that you're telling yourself about situations.
Messages that you give yourself and about situations. And more often than not, the self-talk that people give themselves is negative self-talk. Can you think of some negative self-talk that you've given yourself?
Yeah, work every day.
I'm not good.
Pardon?
Like, well, I guess I deserve this.
Yeah, I deserve
it. But I really don't know, but then you think back, well, maybe this one did it, this one. So that's what you're thinking about.
Uh-huh, yeah. So, gee, I guess I deserve this.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. What else?
I'm no good, I'm stupid.
I really get my big mouth shut. I got myself.
Yeah, but here it is again, out of my mouth, you know, I do this all the time, and you know what, you talk to yourself probably about 300 to 500 times a day in that kind of self-talk, that kind of negative self-talk tape. Well, we could go into the history of where that came from. Albert Ellis doesn't deem that necessarily important, and I don't think we're going to go into it today, but if you think back to when you were a little kid, you can probably, and if you can hear a voice or picture a face for that negative self-talk, you're probably going to see a face somewhere in your childhood of someone giving you information of self-talk. But the point is, it's there. No matter where you got it, and no matter how that developed, the self-talk is there. And as a result, we are often prone to developing stress reactions, developing that, getting angry, frustrated, all of those things that cause our stress reactor to go into overdrive and maybe not turn off because of those negative self-talk. Because when you have the event, it always filters through B before it comes out to C. Always. You're always filtering it through that thought process, that lens. You know, depending on how that self-talk lens is distorted will determine how you perceive certain things. Let's stop and talk about that for a minute. Do you see that happening? Can you give me examples of when you've seen that happening with yourself or in your own life?
I would think that when you think about that face in it, you could probably be thinking too, should I say something to that person or should I not?
Well, that's even before you get to that point. This happens so quickly that oftentimes you don't even notice. I mean, some of you may be saying, what little voice in your head? Well, let's take an experiment for a minute. I want you to just sit quietly for a minute, okay? Just sit quiet. You have 10 seconds. Did you hear it? Did you hear it? What was it saying? 10 seconds sure is a long time. you know, or what is she having us be quiet for? This is really, you know, did you hear that little chattering voice? That voice is talking to you all the time. And sometimes you don't even realize it, and you're not even aware that that's happening. And sometimes the message that little voice gives you is very negative. You know, it gives you the voice that sometimes it says, you know, gee, you're awful, gee, you're a rotten person, or gee, this is terrible, you can't be loved. All kinds of negative things. And so what Albert Ellis suggests is what you need to do is you need to check out how accurately you are perceiving the situation. This is going on, your negative, your voice inside you is telling you this is what's happening, this is how you should perceive this. Well, what you need to do is you need to check it out. Is this a valid perception? Is my lens a valid lens? Or am I distorting what's happening? So how do you do that? Well, Albert Ellis, do you have any questions so far? You all are just sitting so quiet.
How much are you charging us?
Huh?
How much are you charging us?
No, I'm kidding. Charging you for
a session.
For a session? Yes. I'm not looking for, we're not looking for therapy. Of course, we could if you wanted to. Let me go through, I'm trying to think of which way would be, do you have any questions about this? Do you buy this? Or are you saying, you know, because there are lots of people who don't agree with this. I mean, I'm not saying that this is the way that has to go. And would you agree with that?
Well, I've been sort of practicing this last year, where if somebody did something, I go, "Gee, that didn't feel good," because I usually put it off, and now I do it right away. It's sure a relief because I check it out right away, and it's like no problem. Why didn't I do that years ago? I would say, wow, but it's sure nice now.
Okay. How do you check it out?
I just say, well, like if I notice something, I just say to the person, or if it's something felt bad to me, I'll say, I didn't like that, or it felt bad to me, or did you mean, or whatever. And I just do it right away, and it's I take care of it.
Okay, so if you're saying...
Years ago, I used to let it go on and on.
And sometimes, so what you said is you've developed over the last year or so, you've developed a fairly good process of being able to, when it comes in here and it seems distorted, that you're able to pick that up fairly quickly.
Well, but I go by my feelings. If it feels funny, sure. I just go, well, what is it? And
sure.
What's going on here?
Exactly.
Exactly.
If it comes in here and comes out distorted and the emotion you feel feels funny, you turn right around and check this out.
Well, whereas I used to mind read and I just make stuff up.
Sure, sure. One of those classic mind reading is one of the classic, I'm trying to think of the term that they use, the classic distortions. One of the classic cognitive distortions. Well, I knew that's what she said, what she meant. Well, how do you know? Well, I just knew it. I mean, that's just what she meant. Did you ask her? No. Well, then how do you know that's what she meant? Well, I'm just sure that's what she meant. You know, mind reading. You never know what somebody means unless you ask them. So even if they mean something, even if it comes to you and comes out positive, that's, again, just your assumption. You know, more often than not, you're right if you feel positive about it. But it's always, you know, you can check out everything, but you can't mind read. So that's one of the distortions that happens. Okay. Anybody else? Does anybody else have any questions about what we've done?
Your wavelength going into B, real jagged, and then after you mull it over for a while, and it's smoothed out, rounded.
Yeah. What this should be is that it should be smooth coming in. The lens starts to distort it. Then as it comes out, it still feels distorted. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it is. The event coming in is neutral. I mean, an event that happens is neutral until it gets inside your lens. Mm-hmm. And that's where you determine what's going on. Now, there are some, you can go into, well, you know, if somebody shoots somebody else, that's hardly neutral. That's, you know, and I agree with that. But most of the things that we experience, people cutting in front of us in line, people making a remark to us that we take the wrong way, an argument with our spouse or with a close friend, somebody not saying hello to us as we walk down the street, all of these things are fairly neutral things. And what happens is when they get into our lens, then that's when the distortion occurs. And what comes out the other side, maybe something has never happened. Has anybody experienced that before? Where someone, where, and you've checked it out, finally after a while you've checked it out, where maybe you're walking down the street with your, and you see a friend, and you say, "Hi Jane, how are you?" And Jane doesn't answer you. Jane walks past you. Well, what are you thinking as Jane walks past you? One, the first thought that comes to my mind is, did I do something wrong? You know, maybe Jane's mad at me. What did I do to offend her? You know, how come she has to be so stuck up? You know, she's always that way. I just don't understand that. You know, and then, you know, anger. And then by the time it comes out, I'm angry and I'm also hurt because I don't understand why Jane didn't do that. Okay. Now, there may have been some reasons why Jane didn't say hello to me. I mean, Jane saying hello to me is very, not saying hello to me is very neutral.
I could give you an example of what happened with me with that. It's okay. Because I'm hard of hearing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm deaf in one ear and I am hard of hearing in the other.
Uh-huh.
And people say, "Boy, she's snooty," or something. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear them.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Exactly. Linda could be walking. You, one of you could say hi to Linda on the wrong side and in back of her when she's not in. She may walk the other way, and your thought is, "Boy, is she snooty, you know, she's a very nice person," whatever. You know, she could be. She could be snooty, she could be a very nice person, and she could be angry with you. Those things could all be true. But it could also be that she's hard of hearing, she's preoccupied with something else, she just had a fight with someone, and she's thinking about that. She's late for a meeting and is, you know, rushing in that direction and didn't hear you. So, when it gets to this point, what's important? It's important for you to then go back and check it out. And how can you check it out? You could ask her. You know, when you see Linda later, you say, "Hey, I said hi to you earlier this morning and you didn't respond. Is something going on?" How many of you feel comfortable doing that? You know, the first time, if you're not used to doing that, that can be real scary to do. Because what are you going to, because again, if you're going through this filter, what are you going to be thinking? You know, that negative self-talk is, "Oh, if I ask her and she says what?"
That you did something.
Yeah, I am mad at you. You know, this is it, right? You know, and then all these negative kinds of things. But you know that then. Yeah. You know, the other thing is, you know that for sure. And then maybe that's something you can correct.
What are you going to do then?
Well, if it's something that you can
correct,
you know, then you can correct it.
They apologize for it? Or?
Sure. But if you don't check it out, you're over here in this situation.
You're mad.
Oh, you're frustrated.
Yeah.
You know?
The beauty
you're
of it
sad.
Is the communication. Mm-hmm. You're not right. Opening it.
That's right. Yeah. But all of these are continuing going on here until you check it out. Yeah. Once you check it out, then this is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Your switch gets turned off. All that adrenaline gets slowed down. And you can allow yourself to relax.
A lot is caused by no communication. That when I was younger, things bothered me a lot, and I had a lot of seeds. And I've gotten to the point now that that's sometimes with things, that's their problem, it's not mine. And just let it go.
Sure.
And my son called not too long ago, and we were just visiting, and he was kind of putting his problems on my shoulder, and I just told him, pretty plain language, but I said, Steve, shit happens. And there are things you cannot do anything about, and just let it go and go on.
And what you did for him was to identify for him one of the 10, what they call 10 basic, Albert Ellis calls, has some 10 basic irrational ideas. And one of the irrational ideas that we have is external events cause most human misery. People simply react as events trigger the emotions, you know. Well, like you say, shit happens. Life isn't necessarily fair. You know, that's one of the irrational ideas, is life should be fair to everyone. Well, you know, it isn't. It isn't. Bad things happen to good people. And, you know, and to expect otherwise, you know, it's not necessarily a negative approach. It's just acknowledging that, you know, that if something bad happens to you, it doesn't mean that you go through your list of negative self-talk. I'm a terrible person. This is awful. You know, I deserve this. You know, sure, because of the kind of, because I'm so unlovable, this is the kind of thing that happens to me. What you do is you understand that, first off, one of those irrational ideas is part of your lens distortion. You know, if you can understand that, then your lens becomes a little less distorted. And when things come in, you can understand them in a clearer way, in a less distorted way.
You know, sometimes you can't go to the people, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in
right.
a situation at work where I've gone to some classes on this, and it's always been a situation where I haven't been able to ask questions because she's been around or somebody knows. But we work with this lady, and she is absolutely just Satan herself in that office. And especially with me, because in the past I have responded emotionally, crying or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And she's played this game with me for years. So I get now where I just shut up, I don't say anything, I just let her go. But everybody knows in the whole office what she's like. But you can't go to her, because if you go to her, she comes back so vicious on you and reverses the blame on you, even though you've never said anything, you've never done anything.
And so are you able, when you shut it off, are you able then to, you know, then just to reflect that back? Or is what is what's happening, you're still sitting in this mode?
Sometimes I do.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on here? That this is what Albert Ellis, when this happens, when you're not able to shut it off, the suggestion is to go back to be and to think about and to write down, literally write down, what are your negative self-talk statements to yourself when this woman comes to you. I'd love to be able to do an example for that if anybody's willing to, you know, I mean, I know you don't want to necessarily bare your soul, and we won't go down to real deep, but if we can share, you know, what are some of the statements, and be able to identify maybe some of the irrational ideas that we all have with regard to how life is, how life should be, then maybe you can clear that frame. You know, I mean, maybe one of the irrational thoughts is that, I don't have these all memorized, that it's an absolute adult to have love and approval from peers, family, and friends. One of Albert Ellis's 10 irrational thoughts is that I have to have love and approval from you, and 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 you. And if I don't have that, that's terrible.
I can make a comment on that about what I've been dealing with is, because I worked in a men's field, the whole discount that I've experienced being a woman in this culture, I have to really watch that somebody who's acting sort of discounting to me, that they really aren't, but I'm magnifying it. So I have to look at them and say, no, well, you're not doing this to me. But I, it's called post-traumatic stress or whatever, but it's, I have had so much discount as a woman in this culture, but also as a woman who is a logger, firefighter, you know, in the mixed field, I have that hypervigilance of, oh, are you going to put me down? It's right. That hypervigilance. Yeah.
And Albert Ellis would say is that your expectation is that these people, you must have their acceptance in order to feel okay about yourself. And Albert Ellis says that, you know, that I must have your approval of what I'm doing right now, or I'm going to feel awful, or that's going to feel terrible. So one of your thoughts maybe with this woman is, I need to have her approval. And if I don't have her approval, that's terrible. Well,
and you're right, one of the girls at work has told me that, forget it, she doesn't even count, you know what she's like.
Right.
How many years have I told you this and all this, you know? And it is, so I am getting better, and that's where I use my self-talk, by saying how she really is.
That's right, and that's what you do. First off, you say, can I ever have anybody's approval? I mean, there has to be, you know, some of you may be sitting in here right now and saying to yourself, well, I don't really believe what she has to say, and doesn't she have anything else to say, you know, and I'm not sure I like her shirt, you know, and gosh, she's got those socks on, and, you know, so you probably, all of you, sometime or another in here, are thinking thoughts that aren't necessarily approving of me. And so it's impossible, my point is, it's impossible for you to be able to please everyone. In fact, sometimes it seems like you can't please anyone. You know, that you've gone, I've had those days. And the point is that the only person you really need to be pleasing is yourself. So anyway, so that may be part of the distortion. If you can say to your, if you can use some of the rational self-talk that Albert Ellis would suggest or that you might do is, you know, well, so what if she doesn't approve of me? You know, she doesn't approve of anybody. You know, I'm not in this class by myself. This person very seldom approves of anybody. And even if she doesn't approve of me, and even if I was the only person she didn't approve of me, how does that affect my self-worth? You know, I can still be a very worthwhile person and not have her approve of me. You know, she doesn't maintain my self-worth. So that's what you call rational self-talk. You take the irrational talk of, I have to have everyone approve of me, and her approval of me is monumental. And you work that down to be able to say, well, you know, really, her opinion of me, that's not what counts. You know, she may not approve of me, and all right, that may feel uncomfortable. That may sometimes get in the way in the office, but it doesn't mean that I'm a terrible person. And so when you encounter her then again, you can see that she doesn't approve of you, and you can feel maybe uncomfortable, but that doesn't necessarily have to trigger the stress or all of the physiological things that occur, because you know that that's not basic to your well-being. Do you understand where I'm going with that? Any comments on that way to do it? Has anybody besides Linda has ever tried that or found themselves doing that? Giving themselves some rational self-talk? Yeah? You have?
I've worked with Alice's led by you and that system.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did you start out by writing it down?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that they ask that you start out with is by actually writing down the event objectively. That you just sit down and write down what happened. Mary Lou walked in the store and yelled at me, you know, because I didn't have the right kind of toothpaste. Okay, that's the objective. Then the next thing you do is you write down how did you feel about that? You know, well, I felt bad, I felt sad, I felt angry, I felt afraid maybe. I mean, maybe Mary Lou's this huge person and you thought she was going to punch you out because you didn't have the right toothpaste. a variety of things. And then you go back and you go through B and you say, what were the thoughts that occurred to me from the time Mary Lou came in and yelled at me and these feelings? I mean, they're real quick. Things, it doesn't spread over a long time. You have to really sometimes work at what were my thoughts. You know, and a lot of times when you first think that, first work on this, you'll come to and say, well, I didn't think anything. I don't remember thinking anything. You know, well, you know, did you think she was going to hit you? Yeah. I thought maybe she might hit me. Okay. So Mary Lou is going to hit me. That was your thought. All right. Well, has Mary Lou ever hit anybody before?
Yeah.
No, she really hasn't. Okay. What was the reality of Mary Lou actually going to hit you? Well, I guess she really wouldn't have hit me, but it seemed like that. I was afraid. Well, what made you, you know, what about her anger was so frightening to you? Well, she was yelling. You know, and you ask, so what? So what if she was yelling? What does that mean? Well, that means that she was mad at me. So she was mad. So what does that mean? Well, I don't want people to be mad at me. Well, all right, well, so what does that mean if people are mad at you? Well, if people are mad at me, that means that there's something wrong with me. So what if there's something wrong with you? Well, if there's something wrong with me, then nobody's going to like me. Well, so what does that mean? Well, nobody likes me, then I'm not going to have any friends, and I'll be all alone. And sometimes you get to what Albert Ellis calls, and other rational emotive therapists call, the core. There are some core feelings that are down there that some of us all feel. One is, you know, it's awful if I'm alone. Some are some of the core feelings you might have are I'm unlovable. Some of the core feelings you might have are I'm not a worthwhile person. I mean, everybody has their own core feelings, and it's all veiled by lots of negative self-talk, and so the. You know, so that experiencing of questioning you, of getting down, you know, whenever you give yourself an answer to write, well, so what does that mean? And then you write the next level. It's sort of like peeling off an onion. You know, each layer, there's a different part until you get to the core of the onion. More likely, I know when I do this with myself, I don't often get down here. Because that's just too unnerving for me. That starts to cause more stress than just the beginning. And generally, if you really want to work with this, I would suggest that you work with a rational emotive therapist or someone who can really help work you through this. But the top parts, you can certainly work on your irrational thoughts and checking out the reality of the situation. Questions? Yes.
Is it really possible to sit down and rationally, objectively write down all this stuff after it's happened?
Is it possible?
Yeah. You don't. It's not distorted or colored or by.
Well, it'd be your thoughts.
You can't wait to. That's just kind of the beginning point because as you. It becomes kind of natural after a while, and you just doing your head and finding your thinking about it. It just kind of happens naturally, logically, through the situation. The writing it down is just kind of.
I tend to have to get work, you don't have time to write it down. You know, you just live with it at that moment.
Sure, but once you get home and write down what your thoughts were surrounding that event,
Well, actually, I think what happens in that process is you find that it's not the distortion is taken away. Actually, if you write it down, it takes the distortion away when you go back and look at it. Because the distortion is really here, has been my experience.
It's when you write things down and then go back and tear it up, because it really wasn't as bad as you thought it was. And by tearing it up and getting rid of it, that's, that helps too.
That's a way to, you know, to just release yourself. That's a very physical way to release yourself. And again, maybe turn off that switch to release yourself from the stress and the tension that's being caused by your negative self-talk. And one of the nice things is once you've done this often enough, writing it down and it becomes in your head, your response time then, you may still end up having some anxiety, but being able to do it on the spot and do some kinds of rational evaluation of it will lower that stress level more quickly.
No, the same thing on that. Same idea, I was just thinking about when you receive criticism right away, instead of reacting to it, defending yourself or whatever, you could clarify immediately, like, well, what is it that you don't like, or throw it back and make it very clear right away.
Right.
And then you don't have to react to it.
Yeah, and I think that one of the, what I really like the reality checking part of it. And once you get used to doing that, it becomes sort of second nature to you. I mean, the first few times you go back to a person and say, this is my perception of what happened in this situation, and the person, and oftentimes, especially if I've had a very negative perception, the person will say, oh, well, that's not what I meant at all. You know, this is what I meant. Now, you still might not like what they mean, but you will then be having a much clearer idea of what they mean. You'll know. You won't have to mind read. So, you know, checking it out with somebody. And once that becomes second nature, that clears up a lot of the distortion that goes on. You said you were shaking your head. You've done that? Yeah. What I want to do, and I know this may, I want to just give you a sample of some of the irrational beliefs that Ellis says we have. And it is compilations of some of Ellis's and then some other cognitive therapists also. The one was, it's an absolute necessity for adults to be accepted by another. The other one is, you must be unfailingly competent and almost perfect in all you undertake. You know, so if you make a mistake, that's awful. That says something to you about you as a person. You must be terrible. You have to do everything perfectly. Well, okay, raise your hand. I want to see the hands of how many people who know someone who does everything perfectly all the time.
Almost doesn't fit in the sentence. Or try.
Or have, how about someone that thinks they
have to? And here we have a large cognitive distortion right there. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then what you were saying, when we tell ourselves we have to be perfect, is we are trying to achieve a standard that no one can achieve. You know, and I don't know about you, but that's going to raise my stress quotient right there. But we do it all the time. And so, again, you go back to that, and one of the great questions I have for that irrational thought is, well, you know, first of all, who said I had to be perfect? And, who is perfect? You know, what's acceptable for me? You know, and then just asking those kinds of questions. Another one is, it is horrible when people and things are not the way you would like them to be. You know? So he said that's an irrational thought. You know, hey, like you say, sometimes shit happens. And what you do is you work through it. Oftentimes things aren't exactly like we would like them to be. One is, if you don't go to great lengths to please others, they will abandon or reject you. You know, and I think we have mostly women in this room, but I think that often is something that women get caught in. You know, that I have to be very sure that I please you, and because if I don't please you, then I will be abandoned and I will be rejected, and that will be awful. That will mean that what? That you're not loved, that I'm not.
Family is still.
Yeah, that I'm not lovable. You want to say something?
No, wiping my chin.
Okay. So,
scratching your head.
You know, it's nice if you can please other people. You know, that certainly is a very positive side benefit from what you do. But if that doesn't happen, that doesn't say that you're not lovable, and that doesn't say that you're a person that no one wants to be around. You know, again, who do you know that pleases everybody all the time? It's not there. It's easier to avoid than to face life's difficulties and responsibilities. I don't like that. I don't want to do that. You know, this will be hard. Or if I check this out with someone, this will be really hard. This will be very embarrassing. You know, so I just won't do it. I'll just leave it alone. Okay? Well, what's easier? To go ahead and leave it alone, and then to live with all of the stress and the consequences of that stress, heart disease, lung disease, maybe cancer, they say is caused by stress, all of those things, or to take a minute of maybe slight embarrassment to check it out. Your worth as a person depends on how much you achieve and produce. I think, again, oftentimes women have fallen into that spot, because what do we do? At least, you know, for most of you all, I would suspect that you spent your lives at home. Is that right? I may be wrong about that. Raising family? No, you work, so you produced, okay. All right. But a lot of women spend their times at home raising a family, and the idea that they are worth something only if they achieve.
You said she worked and produced. How about the rest of it? I did both.
Yes. All right. And if you hadn't, if you had just stayed home, how would you feel?
Great life.
Oftentimes, though, that the feeling is that if I'm not out there producing something or achieving something, even for men, you know, if I'm not out there getting the Nobel Prize, or if I'm not out there getting the award for the best salesman, then I'm not really worth that much.
Or even working, I can do more. I can make more money. I can do something else that's more worthwhile.
That's right. And if you do that, if you make another $10,000 more, that means you're that much better person. And that's one of the irrational beliefs. You know, your work has nothing to do with what you can achieve.
I have a brother-in-law that said, if you don't have money, you're nothing.
He's definitely on that. Let's see. All right. Well, what I would like us to do, and I know most of us don't have pencils, but I'd like us to try and work through. Who does have a pencil? Because I have a pen. You do? You do? Anybody else? Anybody else have a pencil or a pen? We'll use some of these papers that we used last night for scratch paper. What I'd like us to do is I'd like us to try a rational self exercise. What I want you to do is I want you to think of a time when you got upset, when you were upset with someone, or when you were upset with a particular event, when you felt yourself maybe becoming stressed with regard to that event. And I want you to take a minute and describe the facts of that event. You know, what occurred in that event. No emotions at this point, just facts. And then I want you to identify maybe some irrational thoughts that were going on in your head? What was some of your self-talk that was going on as a result of this event? And then plug in some rational thoughts. Plug in some thoughts that you could have, that you could be able to use to help yourself see the event less distortedly. So use the backs of these sheets of paper to try that. And you can do that on your own. And let's take, we don't have to take an inordinate amount of time to do it, but once you get that, let's break into, let's see, we need three more. Two more. Okay, then we'll break into groups and just talk about not what you wrote down, because that can be, you don't have to share that with anybody. That can be just your own private stuff, but how it was to do that, how it was to go through this process. So give yourself, see, we only have, give yourself about 4 or 5 minutes to write this down, and as it looks like you're stopping, then get into stop and have to go through all the rational. What was the easiest part of this for you to do?
The first one.
Come up with the upsetting event?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Third one.
A little more difficult for you?
Third one
was the easiest. Getting to the self-talk. All right. Let's go to the second part. How many of you had any problem getting to the emotions with regard to the event? Were you all able to touch those pretty well? You weren't. But you could get to the event. I mean, you didn't like the event, but it was hard for you to get to the emotions. Mm-hmm. Okay? All right?
I was very good. Excuse me.
Frustration is what I put under emotions.
Okay? All right. Last night we talked about the idea of frustration is often our code word for anger, because again, one of the rational self statements that we have is that it is terrible and very destructive to be angry, and that people should not be angry. And so sometimes, and I'm not saying that your frustration was a code word for that, but oftentimes we're more willing to say we're frustrated than we were angry. And that's, again, because one of the rational self-talks is anger is automatically bad and destructive. All right, so the self-talk, that was easy for you to get to. Okay, who else was able to get to their self-talk with ease? Okay? All right. I would suspect that for the people who have never done this before, that this would be a hard part to get to, because you're not used to hearing that little voice in your head. And I would encourage you to take some time when you're able to find that emotion, when you're able to identify, I'm feeling stressed about this, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling very uncomfortable, to try and, as soon as you can, listen to that little voice in your head. What is it saying? And what about the rational self-talk? How were you able to do with that?